Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and I'm joined tonight by Jen Swertman from
Hi,
The Blind Tiger. How are you, Jen?
I'm great. It's good to be here.
You know what? We've had a really awesome weekend. We got Halloween, snowstorms, and we're here in Roberta's in Brooklyn.
Yeah, all we survived it.
Yeah.
And now it's November, so let's drink some beer.
All right. We'll give a shout out to our sponsor, greatbrewers.com. Check them out. The Beer Cloud is pretty cool. Have you ever checked that out?
I have not. What are they doing there?
It's a way to find about where beers are.
And so you can put in a beer and you can figure out where they're selling it.
And figure out where to get it, what kind of beer.
It's a good tool. I've heard of a few different apps for iPhones and things that people can check out that map out if they're looking for something specific.
Yeah,
the tools.
Go to greatbrewers.com and check out the Beer Cloud. And thank you to Good Beer Seal. It's our sponsor and founder. Good Beer Seal is 34 New York City beer bars dedicated to serving and promoting good craft beer. All right, we've got a special guest tonight. We've got Josh Bernstein. His book is coming out. It's Brood Awakening. It's something that we've been waiting for a long time. Josh, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jimmy. Happy to be here. Great. I've been waiting a very long time, too.
Tell us a little bit about it, because this is a kind of a unique and novel book.
Well, I've spent the last 5 or so years being a beer journalist, and I'm also a profile writer. So I tried to combine the two passions, beer and people, and because craft beer is nothing but a system of stories and the people. It's all about the passion that gets into the pint glass. And so instead of just sitting there and talking about like why the IPA tastes piney, I talk about that, but I really talk about what drove the brewer to kind of create that, what drove them to make double IPAs or age them in oak barrels. It's really kind of a snapshot of modern American craft brewing and international craft brewing, too.
I know one of your more well-known events is you do these kind of homebrew tours, or tell us a little bit about your involvement with homebrewers.
Yeah, so basically a couple years ago, the people at New York City Craft Beer Week asked me to put together a tour, and I'm not really a tour guide. I'm a beer drinker and a writer, but I thought, okay. And I had a lot of friends who are homebrewers, and that's one of these things where you just never really get a chance to try the homebrew. It's just a random occasion. So I thought, why not create an opportunity for New Yorkers to meet the people making beer in their homes? And so I set up a tour. So 3 different stops. You go into people's homes, meet them, drink their beer, and then go to the next one. It's almost like a roving, voyeuristic house party in a way. And then beginning, everyone's a little nervous. And by the second stop, they've had a couple beers, and everyone becomes friends.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing, because I bet some of the setups in New York apartments are minuscule, and like you marvel at what people are able to accomplish, because I know how tiny my kitchen is.
Some places are just like studio apartments in Astoria, and some are enormous lofts in Williamsburg, which 4,000 or 5,000 square feet, like more space than some of the small breweries in Long Island out
and
there.
Did you connect with them through one of the homebrewing clubs? Are you a home brewer?
You know, I help my friends brew, but I've spent so much time in the last couple of years writing the book. But my friend Sean White, who used to be president of the New York City Homebrewers Guild, he's out working for Cascade Brewing in Portland right now.
Great brewery.
Yeah, great brewery.
Yeah,
and
good
so
sours.
I met a lot of people through that, and so that's how I kind of got the first tour set up. But homebrewing in New York City and the beer community in general is such a small, intimate world that once you meet one person, meet the next person. If you're friendly and you're great, you get recommended, and you know, people, we go in there, are respectful, clean up, get out, and go home. Everyone thinks you're going to go there and wreck places. But
yeah. Hold on a second. I think we have a special calling guest. There's on the talking about homebrewers. There's a guy, Eric Steen, who's doing some performance art. Eric, what are you doing? It sounds like the coolest thing I've ever heard of. And tell us about it.
Well, I've got a couple of events coming up in New York City in mid-November. The first one is November 12th. It's part of this festival called the Performa Festival, which is basically an international performance art festival. It takes place every 2 years in the city. I am going to have a group of homebrewers bring all their equipment together and do a collective brewing day on November 12th. And I kind of like to think of it as a way to look at the aesthetics of a homebrew setup. Everyone kind of builds their setup over a couple years or maybe even a couple decades, and they all have interesting things that they do differently than other people, and I just kind of see it as an interesting way to bring them all together.
And are you is that taking place in the performance space? I think of it, you need water, you need, you know, heat, a burner.
Yeah.
Like, are you just sort of erecting it in a raw space?
Yeah, kind of. It's taking place at what was a Catholic school, actually, and it's being converted into like this hub center for this performance festival. And so we are going to be outdoors. Hopefully it's not snowing the way that it has been.
I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, we have a bunch of hoses that we're providing. We have paid for all the ingredients for all the homebrewers, because, you know, the fact that they have to transport everything back and forth might mean that the beer doesn't stay as sanitary as we'd like it to.
Right.
Yeah. We're also putting together another event. It's kind of like a speakeasy on November 18th and 19th. And I've been working with about 25 homebrewers in New York City, and we are going to serve homebrewed beer to the public. We have a whole lot of beer to give out, and so yeah, it's kind of a pop-up pub sort of idea, I guess.
Are you going to be able to serve the beer that you brew on the 12th, or is it too soon for that?
No. We were thinking about a way to make that happen, but it eventually just got too complicated.
Right.
Eric, tell us about, I have a note here about something you did in Glasgow, Scotland. How did that get started? You're international.
Yeah. thanks. I did a similar thing. It was called the Pup School. And it was during a residency I had in Glasgow, and it was for the Glasgow International Festival of Visual Art. And it was a month-long series where I took a group of people out and we explored pub culture in Scotland. And we did meet the brewers tours. We did brewery tours. We read books to each other about beer. We did homebrewing demonstrations. And then the sort of culminating event was another type of pop-up pub. I had 15 homebrewers, and we just served beer for free to anybody who came in. And we got quite a crowd, to say the least.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they were homebrewers from Scotland? They were.
Yes.
Yeah.
So. So I do these sort of things throughout cities around the United States, and I always try to make it as site-specific as possible. So I'm in New York City for a little bit, I'll work with New York City homebrewers. If I'm in Portland, Oregon, I'll work with Portland homebrewers.
That's great. I bet you learn a lot.
Definitely. And Josh, yeah. Josh, you have any questions for Eric? Because
I think I sent you a number of brewers, Eric. I do a homebrew tour in New York City, and so I put a list out, put a call to arms for a bunch of my brewers, and like I think Jonathan Moxie and a bunch of folks like that, and I think a lot of them got in touch with you, and hopefully that helped out.
I'm actually looking forward to meeting Jonathan Moxie. I haven't met most of these folks, so. Just been in contact via email at this point.
Well, you know, they're all a friendly lot. Homebrewers in New York City, they're a good bunch.
I mean, it's for real. I mean, there's amazing people in the city dealing with beer right now. I mean, from the bar owners and all the great brewers that are meeting. But the homebrewers are really special. I mean, they turn out and they support events. Like, there's going to be a Get Real event December 10th. You know, a lot of the people working on these events, volunteering, they're the homebrew community.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them don't have aspirations of being in the industry. They just really are devoted to homebrewing, you know?
Some do.
Like who does? Who's a homebrewer that you know that either is opening a brewery or wants to open a brewery?
I'm pleading the fifth right now.
Come on. No, what about, okay, can we mention one?
We can mention one, yeah.
Rich puts out a single, what's it called? Single Cut Beersmith.
He's a good friend, and he they just got the financing, and they're going to be able to start the, lay the groundwork for their brewery in upstate New York next year, so...
All right,
cool. You know, but it's like in this climate right now is a long, arduous process to get people to open up their pocketbooks.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah. It takes a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And
but do you think that homebrewing is the training ground for brewers, or do you think that a prospective brewer really should go to a brewing school? And are there brewing schools?
Either way, it can be done successfully. Either way, there are different approaches. So it's fun to see homebrewers like step up and they start so tiny, and mm-hmm. then they pull their funds and resources and their passion, you know, gets to see the public.
It becomes an addiction.
Yeah.
We got a Janine and Ken here from Crossroads too. They're going to be our next guests. But since we're talking about how do you get started as a brewer, Janine, I think you have something to say. You just shake your head up and down. Yeah. How would you recommend to a brewer? Get close. How would you recommend to a prospective brewer? Are there brewing schools? You know, should you just go work at a brewery? Should you just do home brewing?
I think either way. I think that you can be successful regardless of whether you go to college or not. I think it's something that's inside you. I think it's something that you know, that you taste, that you feel. I don't think that school is necessary for a chef or a brewer or for an artist or anything.
Really. But how did you guys get started? I mean, we're going to cut to it because you guys are the whole story tonight. You guys are Crossroads Brewery from Athens, New York. You guys were the stars of the New York City Brewer's Choice. You got some awesome beers, you know. Let's cut to the chase because you got Eric over here. They're planning how to take over the world with beer.
Well, I don't know about taking over the world.
They need to learn from someone like you guys.
Well,
how did you get started?
Like you said before, this is something that I think is in. It's in you. It's been a long, long, long road for us. It's about 8 years now. If we really analyzed every detail, it would take a very, very long time to kind of explain.
But did you start as a home brewer?
I was involved in some home brewing a very, very long time ago. Not before TV or anything, but a lot of my good, close friends are brewers, and just got the bug probably back when Pete's Wicked Ale was kind of like coming out, and it was really interesting to see the transformation. But back then, you know, we were really pioneers, and to search out some real good beers was a challenge. And I guess we just took it to another level.
So are you from New York originally, too?
I'm originally from Bayside.
Yeah.
Bayside, New
York. So, yeah, it's taken a long time for New York to really pick up this momentum, so...
Yeah, it's been an interesting ride. It started 8 years ago, possibly nine now. I don't even know. It's one giant
blur.
It really is. It really is.
And Ken, you guys are in an opera house? Maybe. Oh, sorry. You're in an old opera house?
Yes, we are. Yeah, we're in an old opera house that was built in 1893. It's up in a small little riverfront village in Athens. It was in shambles. It's 15,000 square feet. And we got it 2 years ago, almost to the date. And we've been renovating it ever since, and we're still in the construction phase of it all.
But you are brewing.
We are brewing.
Yeah. And when did you? When did your first batch?
Actually, we just celebrated our 1 year anniversary for our first batch.
Yay! Yeah.
So it took a year of build out.
We're going to talk more to you guys about how you got started. But just any more questions for Eric? Because he's going to performers coming at you November 12th. Any more questions for him? Eric, you want to say anything else about your event?
November 12th is at Collective Brew Day. November 18th and 19th is going to be the Homebrewers Pub. So, yeah, check it out by Googling Performa and looking for my name, Eric Steen. That should do it.
I think it's really exciting. I can't wait to hear about it. And hopefully
do you want us to come and try your beer?
Oh, yeah.
Are we invited?
That would be great.
I would love to come. This sounds pretty cool. Yeah. Sounds like a beer party.
Have fun with it.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a short break. Eric, thanks so much. We'll be back talking more with Josh Bernstein and the guys from Crossroads on Beer Sessions Radio.
Trailer for sale or rent. Rooms to let 50 cents. No phone, no pool, no pets. Ain't got no cigarettes. Ah, but 2 hours of pushing broom buys a 8x12 four-bit room. I'm a man of means by no means. King of the road. Third boxcar, midnight train. Destination Bangor, Maine. Ooh, worn out suit and shoes. I don't pay no union dues. I smoke.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Here we are with a cool group, Jen Swartman from Blind Tiger, Kenny and Janine from Crossroads, and our good friend Josh Bernstein here on the day of his release of Brood Awakenings,
yay,
the long-awaited book. So here we are. We got Josh, who's my favorite beer writer right now, and Kenny, let's dig into it. Kenny from Crossroads, you kicked some butt. You were at New York City Brewer's Choice. We loved your beer, especially the Outrage IPA. Tell us about your first brewing job.
Oof. This is, first and foremost, I really don't want to sit here and take all of the credit for the beer that's being brewed up at our place, because our brewer, Hutch, any credit. Hutch Kugman is our head brewer up there, and he's been doing an absolutely phenomenal job. I can't say enough about the quality of the product that he's producing. We're ecstatic to have him with us. And we're very lucky to have him with us. The beer speaks for itself. There's really not much advertising.
How many different beers have you brewed so far?
Well, right now, we have up at the pub, we have 10 staples. We have five of our house beers, and we have five seasonals. And it's a
That's
challenge.
Quite a few.
It's a challenge. It's been a challenge. And you know, every day we walk in, and you know, we look at each other and say, okay, you know. What's going to happen today? What beers are we brewing? It is a passion, but at the we work a lot of hours, and we're passionate about what we do. It's a job, and but we're you got to really get excited about it.
Are they mostly ales? Are they all ales?
We're doing a couple of ales. We actually have
lagers?
We don't do lagers. We did a lager back in the day. Our system is a little too small, kind of ties our tanks up for a little bit of time.
What's the barrelage of the system?
We're a 7-barrel system, okay, right now. We're looking
to start.
Yeah, we're looking to add a bright tank to up our production a little bit. So we're a new company. It's trial and error, and it's a challenge. Honestly, it's a challenge. It really is.
Kenny, Brandon Moore, your sales rep here from American. What did you just pour for us, Brandon?
I just poured their Belgian Triple, which I've been sitting on for a year and waiting for a great reason to drink it, and it smells awesome.
Thanks for sharing it. Yeah,
and you're welcome.
It's kind of dark and caramelly. It's beautiful.
Thanks for sharing it with me. Yeah, it's really cool. I don't know that keeping it in the fridge was the best spot for it for that long of it for a year, but I haven't tasted it yet, but it smells incredible.
I think that Kenny's being modest, because I think his beer is really great. Yeah. Tell us a couple of things about Crossroads and how it got started. Because he's got a pedigree. Didn't he used to work at a different brewery?
Yeah, he was instrumental in launching Butternuts as a early sales rep, doing drywall and also doing Butternuts, if I'm not mistaken. And
so how do you do drywall? But how do you do drywall and Butternuts? I understand.
Well, you drive around with drywall dust all over yourself, right? And then you go in and try to sell beer.
Yeah, pretty much. One six pack at a time. Yeah, out of the back of the van. Yeah.
So he had an early start with craft beer and that, and then I think you wanted to do some more. You wanted to get into some stuff, and so you branched out with Janine, and you guys found this opera house space, and you were able to do a lot of the beers that you always wanted to do. And you found Hutch, too, a great brewer, and he was able to put together the beers that you wanted, and now I get to drink them.
So yeah. How about you, Janine? Yeah. I mean, have you been a fan of craft beer for a long time, too?
It took a long time to get to the point of being a hophead like I am now.
That's a process.
It is a process. And then one day you taste a particular beer. For me, it was a Three Floyds product. the Dreadnought.
Yeah.
And I tasted it out there at their place, and that was it. I've been a hophead ever since. But I was always, even in the early, in my early 20s, I was looking for anything other than Budweiser or sure. anything other than Coors. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. But just no, anything.
I think that's
anything.
What
I think that's a positive thing.
Anything that was not them.
Yeah, we assume for. That you're you don't know about Coors.
I didn't know that then. What I was looking for was craft beer, but eventually I came to it that this is what I've been waiting for this whole time. So I met the right person and it all happened from there.
How long have you guys been together?
We've been working on this for 9 years.
So you've been working on the project. It was like a dual effort from the beginning.
Yeah, we both kind of had the same dream.
Fantastic.
So anything else we should know about? Wait, Brandon, one more time. Tell us a few more secrets about Kenny from Crossroads.
Why is it secrets about me?
We got lots about him.
Because you're too modest, Kenny.
You're modest.
You're not self-promoting enough. We need Brandon to be your spokesman.
Hey, Kenny, I actually have a question. Because Athens is a small community, so how have they really embraced you? I mean,
Athens, 1900 in the village. That's what we have. It's been quite interesting for the last year to see. We actually have turned a good portion of the village from, you know, macro beer drinkers to craft beer, and they really embraced us to the point where they actually defend us now. And it's amazing.
There's a bit of a culinary scene in Athens, isn't there? Or there's some sort of food influence. I've heard this about this one particular little pocket.
You know, there's a lot of
Hudson as well.
Along with the locals and the artists and the musicians, and it's just a real interesting mix of people that come up. A lot of people have second homes up there from the city, so they're a driving force. But the transformation, I think, of the local people, introducing them to this product and the craft beer industry, to me has been astonishing, I think. To convert somebody who, you know, shops at Stewart's and buys 18 packs of macro beers, and now they're consuming Outrage IPA. Yeah. You know,
can't drink.
Do you sell growlers so that people can take it home?
Absolutely.
We
have our growlers here.
It's exciting.
It's amazing because the village has been completely transformed. People walk around. It's like trendy in Athens to walk around Crossroads growlers.
So Kenny, what was the kind of trend you want? So what was the, you mentioned you've turned them on to your beers. What's been kind of the gateway beer for that? Like which one has kind of been the one that really got people that like, you know, Crossroads makes some darn good beer.
Actually, we took a risk. We did introduce the Brady's Bay Cream Ale as our gateway beer as well as the Outrage IPA. So we kind of went from one extreme to the other. And the reason why the Cream Ale, they associated the Cream Ale name with the Jenny Cream. And, you know, it's people...
Does it have a similarity?
No, it doesn't, actually. It's actually an American Golden Ale. Yeah. It was just more nostalgia than anything else to wow, this is a Cream Ale. I can associate with this. I can drink it, but
and
this
is
it
sounded
anything.
Accessible.
Exactly.
Probably. So
exactly.
It got them to at least take a sip and
exactly.
take that risk.
Exactly.
So,
actually, spent
whatever
a good,
it takes.
I spent a good portion of my college career drinking Jenny Cream Ale in 16-ounce returnable bottles, sold for $1 at my, in actually Athens, Ohio, to make the synchronicity kind of, to make it go through with the day.
Yeah.
Well, you're someone that's done well for. I mean, I myself don't usually go for Cream Ale. And in fact, I put your beer on my line last night, the Brady's Bay, and I called it Golden Ale.
Yes. So, that is the professional description of that beer is a Golden Ale. Yeah.
Wow, yeah. This is cool. And then, do you sell mostly up there around Athens?
We do. Our distribution right now goes all the way from Newburgh to Albany. Columbia County is a huge market for us. Obviously, we love being down in the city in Brooklyn.
Who distributes for you up there?
We do.
You have a truck and drive around?
Yeah, Janine and I, we self-distribute.
Well, that's I think that's the way to do it. That's what Barrier does from Long Island.
Yeah, absolutely.
They come and bring me two kegs every week.
Yeah, they're doing a great job.
Traffic.
Yeah, they're doing a great, great job. Yeah, there's no traffic up there, so we can move around pretty good. But again, like I said, it's a challenge. You know, you walk in every morning and, you know, what's going to go wrong today and... you know, how are we going to make more beer? So
you also have a functioning music venue at the brewery in the Opera House now, or is that a plan? Has that happened yet?
The ultimate plan is it's a 15,000 square foot Opera House. Second floor is actually the Opera House. It once was the Opera House. Our plan is in hopefully 2 to 3 years we can get the second floor open as a music venue. We'd like to do a lot of our own beer festivals up there, beer dinners, art exhibits, and what have you. Anything that we can put 300 people up there, but it's in it's got to be renovated, and we're in the process of that.
And then do you have enough room in the brewing space to expand the way you envision? Like a put a bigger system, or are you already like feeling it?
We're challenged right now for that, and we're constantly figuring out how to get more of our product out to the marketplace. And it never goes away, I don't think. I think if we introduce more fermenters and more bright tanks for a while, it would be okay. But it's like, where do you really want to see the product go, and how big do you really want to get? And we're constantly challenged. There's no doubt about it. I'd be lying to you if I said it wasn't. So,
What's your brewer's name again?
That's Hutch Cuban.
And where did he brew before?
Hutch was up at
Great Adirondack
Steak and Brewing Company up in Lake Placid. He did a short stint up at Ithaca. Mm-hmm. He was there for I think about 6 or 7 months, and it was actually coincidence how we got a hold of Hutch. We had A while back, this is probably going back maybe 4 or 5 years at this point, when we introduced the idea to him. We were just friendly at festivals, and we asked him if he'd be interested in getting involved in a startup project. And, it didn't go anywhere, and we had a few projects fall apart on us because this has been a long search and a long project to really accomplish here. But He went over and he was working for Ithaca as a shift brewer, and just by coincidence, Drew, actually Pro Brewer, and emails, we got a hold of him, and we got really lucky. So, and we're real excited to have him. So,
Sounds like a lot of things fell into place to make this happen.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you worked hard for a long time, but when it did happen, it's happened really well.
I think hard work plus perseverance equals luck.
Yeah, I don't even. I don't even know how we're doing what we're doing right now. I honestly don't.
Oh, we like the beer.
Is fantastic.
Brandon, you just poured a growler for us of the famous Crossroads Growler beer. But what is this beer? It's a little spicy.
It is. It's their Harvest Ale. It's the Hunter's Moon Harvest Ale, and it smells awesome. It's a little spicy. It's a saison. It's obviously it's super fresh because you guys just filled it up at the brewery, so it tastes amazing right now. And it's
carried it around in a bag all day.
Well, it's been down the thruway. It's been to Jimmy's 43 drop off service. It's been through the subway, and it still tastes good. So
that's saying something.
Here's a question for you. I mean, you guys are new. You're starting up upstate. How did you make a connection with a New York City distributor?
Well, I had talked to Joe Marino, who's the owner of the distributor, back when I was
at American.
Okay. Yep. And basically talked to him when I was peddling pork slap pale ale for Butternuts, and just kind of like put it in the back of my head that maybe one day, if I ever did open up my own brewery, this was the type of distributor that I wanted to be associated with. Not killing us for product, but placing it in the places that I feel is where the beer needs to be.
It's a quality issue more than anything else for us. We're not going to put a product out there that we're not sure about. We're not going to put something out that's going to sit on a shelf for a long time. We're not. These guys care about the beer the way we care about the beer.
American is pretty neat. I mean, over the years, you guys have really brought in quite a few new breweries to New York. Mm-hmm. Can you name a couple so that our listeners really can appreciate how important Joe and American distributing have been to New York City?
Well, just in my recent time of 3 years working for Joe, Captain Lawrence was a brand that from New York as well, that would just brought great beers to the market, and so much so that they've gone to a larger distributor. But our network, we do what we can. We do the best we can with what we have, and And Joe's not looking to take over the world. So, you know, if we're happy whenever a brewery like Crossroads comes our way with the products that they have, and we can go up to the brewery and like we did and drink them. This is when I got the Belgian Triple when I was up there drinking with them. And we're just really excited that they decided to do business with us and that they like our chain of and the way we operate. You know, we open our, but the products are available to anyone, you know, I mean, but we do like the people that, like yourself, that are connoisseurs that are out looking and knowing about things ahead of time and come to us and ask for it. And that way we know I'm getting X amount of barrels and you're going to get some, you know, in that way.
American has a really humane reputation and it just goes hand in hand with craft brewing, especially on a small scale, because you know, those people are passionate and making small amounts and want to make sure that the small amount they have is going to go to the right places, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. And American has that cachet of being like super small and personable.
No, it's just, well, we're taking a short break. Let's raise our glasses to Joe from American. And we'll be back in
a few
minutes,
Joe.
On
Thanks, Joe.
Beer Sessions
to
Radio.
Joe.
Cheers.
Remember when I was a lad, times were hard and things were bad, but there's a silver lining behind every cloud. Just poor people, that's all we were, trying to make a living out of Blacklander. But we'd get together in a family circle singing loud. Daddy sang bass,
Mama sang tenor,
me and little brother would join right in there.
Singing seems to help a troubled soul. One of these days, and it won't be long, I'll rejoin them in a song. I'm gonna join the family circle at the throne. No, the circle won't be broken. By and by, Lord, by and by. Daddy sing bass,
Mama sing tenor,
me and little brother will join right in there.
In the sky, Lord, in the sky. Now I remember after work, Mama would call in all of us. You could hear us singing.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We have a lively crew here tonight. Jen Swartman, Blind Tiger, Josh Bernstein with his new book, Brood Awakenings,
yay,
and the team from Crossroads in American. All right, Josh, give us a couple of things about your book, because I want to buy it, but I don't know why I should buy it.
But Jimmy, I thought you liked
pitch.
All things. I
we
thought
you liked
just
pitch.
Another beer book. Come on.
God, you know, when you talk about sales pitches, it becomes such like the craft beer industry is not really about the sales pitch. The craft beer industry is all about conversation and about that. And like that's what I try to have a conversation in this book and really to bring to life the brewers. You drink an Avery IPA, you drink something from you drink a Captain Lawrence Sour, you drink these beers, and you find out why these brewers do it. And it's like it's really them on the page and they're I'm just a conduit for what's been happening in the craft beer industry. And so, I mean, it's hard to say. It's not like a hit list of like what's been happening, but it's just like there's been so much happening in the world in craft beer, and there's been no greater time to be a craft beer drinker, ever right now. But it's kind of confusing, too, for a lot of people when you go there and, black IPAs are big right now, but what does a black IPA mean? And names tend to be bandied about pretty readily and without a lot of explanation.
So obviously you had to narrow down the very lengthy list of like characters in this industry, because we all know that it's like it feels almost infinite now. How many people you could talk to have an amazing story?
Yeah, I talked to hundreds of people for the book.
So you did, and then you just sort of narrowed it down by
try thinking about
who represents styles.
Yeah, I think style wise, like for example, Ron Gansberg does at Cascade. To go back to them, he makes some of the best. Sour fruit beer is done with lactobacillus, which is a bacteria that they found in, milk and yogurt and things.
But
like
it makes
that.
Things sour.
It makes things sour. But they also make lots of great IPAs there and lots of great gozas and things such as that. But you can't talk about the same people for everything. So you try to narrow it down to find out what they do best and really let them talk about their passion.
Sure.
Because with every brewer, there's usually one style that becomes their passion, something they really care about. Like, for example, John Kimmich from The Alchemist is known for his heady topper. And unfortunately, The Alchemist up in Vermont, they went through some rough times lately with the hurricane that flooded out their brewery. They're in the process of rebuilding. But the lucky thing is they opened up their production facility right around the same time, so able to put out their Heady Topper Double IPA, which everyone loves. But the story I talk about...
They're canning it now.
Yeah.
That new facility is for canning, so that's exciting.
But instead of talking about that with him, even though everyone loves his Double IPA... So the interesting thing is his wife is a super big craft beer fan, and she loves everything he makes. But then a few years ago, she started getting sick. And then they didn't know what it was, and the initial thought is it's going to be cancer. It's something terrible. And then it ended up being something terrible, but for a really different reason. It ended up being she diagnosed with a gluten intolerance, so she couldn't drink beer because beer is made with barley, which contains gluten, and celiac disease is something your body just rejects that. You have some... I don't know the science exactly, but there's just something that your body does not take, and you have crippling stomach pain, and you have... it doesn't do right for you.
Right.
And so he was like, how can I go around and still make great beer for my wife? So he's like, I'm going to make gluten-free beer.
And he has won so many awards for that beer.
Yes.
He won a World Beer Cup last time there was a World Beer Cup. Mm-hmm. He wins, like, GABF medals. Like, that particular beer is what he... stands up for, and nobody can get it unless you're in Waterbury, Vermont.
I've heard whispers they may be doing their Celia Saison. They may be trying to get that wider distribution right now, just because it makes sense, but most gluten-free beers, which is a growing category, they tend to hit the middle road because you're trying to appeal to as many drinkers as possible, because it's still a very narrow... craft beer in general is still such a narrow thing, and you're talking about narrowing down even further to craft beer lovers that either suffer from gluten intolerance or have celiac disease, and it just goes down and down and down, and no one really wants to devote a lot of, tank space to it, because when, like Kenny, you have seven barrel system, and then it's like, how many fermenters can you really devote to that? Then you have to ensure the cleaning, but what John's done is, like, gone beyond that, and so that's why, for example, like, he really...
I've heard that people go to the pub and they'll drink that beer and they're not gluten intolerant. They just love the beer.
What's the name of his brewery again?
The Alchemist.
The Alchemist.
Thank you.
Yeah, with John.
Waterbury, Vermont.
Name two other breweries that you've mentioned in your book that you feel like have a good story that we should learn about.
Oh, gosh. You put me on the spot here for a second. Let's... one of the ones I love, and unfortunately they're only now getting into the East Coast, and it's Firestone Walker. Okay. And Matt Brindelson, he's a fantastic brewer, and like he's slowly getting out here on the East Coast, but he's not really, their distribution's not quite here yet. I've had a couple beers, not quite there yet. But what he's done is he's one of the best blenders, and so he takes the concepts. Firestone Walker is also, they had winery roots, so he takes the concept of a winery where he blends together different barrel aged beers and tries to create a whole, which is what wineries do, and he's trying to really make
I think once a year he actually invites all the regional wine blenders in to blend. I could be getting this wrong, but the Parabola, I think, is the one. One of the ones that he puts out that he's known for that's an Imperial Stout, I'm pretty sure. And he actually invites the whole regional wine, blending community to sit around a table and to create that beer every year and puts it in their hands. And I've heard him asked, he's been asked, so are you ever disappointed with the outcome? And he's like, absolutely not. These guys have a palate, even though their palate is usually geared toward wine. If you have a palate, you can translate it.
One more brewery. Anything from the Southeast or the South?
From the South, there's a Terrapin. Terrapin beer is one of the big ones from down in Georgia. And, a decade ago when they started up, Georgia was a much different... Georgia is still a little bit behind the times. It's owing more to just... laws, regulations, and things handicapping what brewers can and cannot do. And so Spike, the brewer down there, was trying to think, he loved hoppy beers, but he's like, the South isn't ready for hoppy beer. A hoppy beer to a Budweiser drinker is just it's an atom bomb in the mouth. It's not something you're really, it's just going to either shock you in the right way or put you off the type of beer forever. So he was like, how can I make this beer palatable? And he was a big rye whiskey drinker. And, rye dries out, adds a sharpness, complexity, and it can temper some things in a way and make it a much crisper, cleaner drinker. And so we started making a rye pale ale, and then it became a runaway hit, and it kind of defined the brewery and really gave them the launch pad. And since then, they've become rye magicians, and they use it.
How long have they been around?
Roughly. If Brandon can open up the book. I think it's been about, I think it's about 7 or 8 years they've been going around.
Yeah, Sweetwater is another one that's very good down in Georgia. Mm-hmm. So that has been around for a number of years and kind of helped set a standard for the South, which did need to... It had to start somewhere.
It did. I mean, Alabama, for example, had for a long time, I think until about 2 years ago, you couldn't have beers that are stronger than 6%, which doesn't just handicap brewers. It handicaps people that want to bring beer down there, because if you can only bring one or two beers in your portfolio, what's really the point? You want to really blanket a area. And so really, I mean, legislation is patchwork state by state by state, and that's why you find...
Is that law still in place for Alabama?
You know, there was a bunch... It's called Free the Hops. There was an organization that went out there, and it was a grassroots build-up, and they changed it. But now there's even more arcane ones. They can't have beer bigger than 16 ounces, and so you can't have a bomber sold down there. You can't have a 750 bottle of Kenny's beer like we just cracked, and it's just, you know...
What beer did you just pour for me, Ken?
Oh, that was the Dr. Loomis Pumpkin Ale.
It's a nice, subtle pumpkin-spiced beer. It's beautiful.
How strong is this beer?
You better.
You get the sheets here, Brendan. Brendan, you're the sales guy.
5.6.
All right. I could drink that in Alabama.
It's 5.6.
5.6. Hit it right on the head.
All right.
Nice.
So that's going down to Alabama, right?
Yeah.
Now you can have, I think, 13.5 in Alabama.
All right,
now.
Last question for Josh, because Josh has got... You got some fancy events coming. You got a special event tonight, and you pick certain beers for that event. What beers did you pick for your event at City Reliquary, opposite Spite and Dival in Williamsburg?
Yeah, so tonight, 7
p.m. We're going after the show, if anybody wants to meet us there.
So at 7 p.m. tonight, we're going to have the book release party.
Don't twist my arm, Josh.
No, I know. So basically, I've been a writer for a long time, and book release parties tend to suck. And so I tried to think, what do I want to do? If I go to a party, what do I want? I want good food and I want good beer. And so we got great sausage on the grill. We got great Italian appetizers coming there. And then, you know, it goes back to the cycle back to the homebrewer. A lot of these people on the tour have become really great friends, because when you start sharing this passion for great craft beer, you know, it spills over. It becomes, you have dinner together, you go out together, meet up together. And so... I think we have 10 different beers we're going to be pouring tonight. Fritz Furno, who's a great home brewer, is pouring his Horny Rhinoceros. Was a rye-driven IPA. We're going to have Dan Pizzillo has a ESB, an English-style bitter with a hop back, like a nice hop nose, a watermelon wheat for people that like their beers a little bit lighter. And then Single Cup Beersmiths is going to be providing 4 beers, like a dark, IPA, like a black IPA. They're going to have a rum barrel aged pumpkin beer and a few other ones, which he's still trying to decide upon. And then also Barrier Brewing, which is in the book. We're doing the Vermilion Saison, which is a red Saison. And then lastly, because I think a lot of thirsty people are there, I got a big keg of a Kelso IPA for reserves, just in case we need to break into it, which we probably will.
All right.
Great.
Cool. Jen, any special events going on at Blind Tiger that you know about?
Oh, yeah. We've got this coming Sunday, we have our annual Farm to Bar, where the Fable Farms farmers are coming down from Vermont, from Barnard, Vermont, and bringing food, bringing produce, bringing meat. And we'll have a special menu on Sunday and hopefully some really great Vermont beer. I'm assuming Dave's going to make sure that happens. So it'll be fun.
Kenny, anything you want to say before we get off the air?
Yeah, I'd like to actually say, I don't want to get long-winded here, but something that kind of like always sticks in our mind, and it pertains to someone in this room. Many years ago when the Ginger Man first opened, and we walked in there, and, you know, the craft beer industry was just kind of like getting some legs, and there was a woman behind the bar, and she came up to us, and we didn't know who it was, and had, I think, if I remember correctly, pigtails in her ear, in her hair, sorry.
Yeah.
and it was Jen, and we left there, and we were extremely impressed of her beer knowledge, and it really stuck with us for a female to have that kind of knowledge in a predominantly male-dominated industry was very, very impressing to us. And I know Janine was very impressed by that. So it's a big honor to be sitting here with Jen now, who knew, you know, 9-10 years
Thanks,
later
guys.
that this was going to be the case.
That
means
a lot, 'cause that was
We are really, truly honored to be here sitting here with you. And you, I think, let's put it this way. You've definitely put a brand in our brains about what the craft beer industry is all about.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, cheers to Jen.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys. Can't tell me how much that means.
And Josh, you're doing another event next week, right? At Jimmy's number 43.
Yeah, I'm doing an event with Jimmy. So we got a bunch of folks that are in the book from Sheldon Brothers, which is a fantastic importer of European international beers. So we're going to have beers from, I think, Epic from New Zealand, which makes great hoppy IPAs. We're going to have Du Duciel? Are we going to do Du Duciel?
You know, I don't know the full list, but it looks pretty
good.
Well,
it looks like we got Du Duciel. We're going to have, and I think some Mikkeller beers, too, and a few other special treats you're not going to find most other places on draft.
All the fun stuff. Next Wednesday, November
9th.
At Jimmy's number 43. And a big shout-out to DBA Brooklyn, our good friend.
Woo!
Woo! Dearly beloved and past Ray Dieter, as they're continuing his Williamsburg Cask Ale Festival. It starts Friday night, so go check it out. I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com. Thanks again to Good Beer Seal, our sponsor. You can find more about us. Go to @beer_sessions if you want to Twitter us. Next time you can send some Twitter questions and do all that. So thanks to Jen, Eric, Kenny, Janine, Joshua, and Brandon for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Enzi, Brie O'Connor, and guest coordinator, Brett Thompson. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. Thank you, guys.
This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from Food Karma. To kick off the New York City Meat Week in style, Meat with a Twist will bring together the best chefs and mixologists for a cocktail food pairing party on November 7th from 6 to 10 p.m. at City Winery. Meat with a Twist features 10 cocktails paired with 10 chef selections highlighting local, sustainably grown meat such as duck, lamb, chicken, pork, beef, bison, and ostrich. The party will launch a week's worth of events throughout the city that celebrate the slow food movement bringing sustainable meats to our tables. Again, that's November 7th from 6 to 10 p.m. at City Winery. Updates, tickets, and more information are available at meatweeknyc.com.